When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show today, brought to you by The Athletic UK. We're going to be looking back at Fulham's 2-0 win in the second round of the Carabao Cup against Birmingham City. Not that anyone who wasn't there at the game was able to see it. And we'll be looking ahead to Saturday's top-of-the-table clash, as Sky Sports would call it, against Stoke City. Both on 10 points. What will be the outcome going into the international break? And, of course, it is the Thursday Club, so I'm joined by Mr. Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And P. Diddy himself, Peter Rutzler.
Ooh, P. Diddy. Okay. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm not sure about that, mate.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about that one.
I'm slightly underwhelmed by that. I like nicknames as they go. That one I'm not sure about.
P. Rutz.
P. Rutz, I can live with.
I don't know why I came up with that. Sorry, I should have given you an official title. Chief Fulham writer for The Athletic, Peter Rutzler. How are you doing?
That's much better. Thank you, Sammy. Better to use my full title.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Jack, let's go into some of the three-word reviews from Birmingham on Tuesday. What were the best ones that came in? Most of them seem to be centred around the fact that none of us that were at home could watch it.
Yeah, there was a lot of just couldn't see it. So I decided to try and steer away from that in some parts, unless they were really good. Rob Zapowski had Stan's Field Trip, which I thought was clever. Alison Nimmo said Stan's Field of Dreams. Matt Wall, Unseen Brum Fun. Was a good one. Matt Chantry with Silver Trillion Trophies, I enjoyed. Luke Resch with a similar Stan's Fields of Gold. But the best of the lot was from our very own Cam Ramsey. And I hate doing this because it feels really like self-centered, but this was unbelievable. He had streamless but seamless.
Yeah, it was the clear winner. And it doesn't
94
look...
likes. You don't get that very often.
It's not a good look for Fulhamish picking our own as the best three-word review.
But when they're that good, sometimes you just have to. Yeah.
I mean, that's why we hired him. You know, that's why he's a writer for Fulhamish. Yeah, exactly. So, well done, Cam. Although Brum Fun was particularly
Unseen Brum Fun, excellent from Matt Wall. Very, very good.
Before we start, just to say that if you want to sign up for The Athletic UK, you can right now, getting 33% off the subscription. Just go to theathletic.com/Fulham Pod. Get all of Peter's articles and all of the other fantastic articles on there. I read the David Ornstein, Jack Wilshere interview yesterday, which was a particularly brilliant, insightful, at times kind of sad interview with such a great player, an iconic player that has not had the career that he wants. But that was my particular highlight on The Athletic this week, outside of Peter's wonderful work, of course. But yeah, athletic.com/Fulham Pod. If you want 33% off the regular subscription, there is so much good stuff on there. And you get to listen to this pod advert free. So that's an added bonus. You don't have me waxing on
or
about
a non-added bonus, if you will.
Oh, very good. Very good. You don't hear me wanging on about, I don't know, cryptocurrency or wrapping paper solutions, monthly subscriptions of that kind of stuff. You just get pure Fulhamish, unadulterated Fulhamish. Right, let's come on to the game then. I should say, by the way, if you hear him banging in the background, I've got electricians working downstairs, so apologies in advance. Peter, talk to us about Birmingham on Tuesday. None of us saw it, so you're even more valuable than normal.
Yeah, that was strange that no one could see it. I mean, it's a shame because Jay Stansfield's goal was excellent. You know, it was a lovely, lovely finish. I think most people, when they talk about Jay, they talk about his ability to take his chances and his very, very good right boot. It's been a sort of difficult period for him. I mean, we'll probably talk about him a little bit more, but, you know, to come back in to get his first full start, and to take it like that was fantastic. And it was a shame that, that obviously you guys couldn't see the goal, but I'm sure you've all seen it now and afterwards. It felt like job done in Birmingham. Both teams made a lot of changes. I think Birmingham made 11 actually, or maybe it was 10, but Fulham made 10. And I think the encouraging thing is that Fulham are still unbeaten. Four wins in a row. It's four wins in a row. That's right, isn't it? Yeah, four.
Yeah.
So many. I'm losing count. and that feeling has sort of been shared around the squad a little bit more. The ones that came in, I think, did very well. I think the positions we're probably looking at most will be right back. Obviously, Dennis Odoi came in and did well, and centre half, because of the fact that Kenny Tetter and Tim Ream are doubts. And it'll be interesting to see who gets the nod after that. But in terms of the performance, it was a job well done. And it was nice to see the youngsters do well. I mean, there was a good academy spine. Obviously, Tyrese Francois, Adrian Pajaziti making his full debut. Thought he looked very, very comfortable. And then obviously, Marek Rodak back in goal. Didn't have too much to do. Everything he did do seemed pretty confident. And Jay up front. So all in all, a good night's work. Hats off to the 300 who did travel as well. It was good to see you all there.
Yeah, no, real respect to those that did make it up. You know, short notice and trying to get tickets was difficult because I think you couldn't get them on the gate because it was like a 48-hour window to get them. So real respect to those that make it up to Birmingham. It was annoying because effectively the way that the second round of the Carabao Cup is done is it's split into north and south. So generally for the second round, you should get a tie that's like not like a massive trip, but Birmingham is probably on the borderline of where the north south line
you can get, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's an unfortunate one.
If I'm not mistaken, Villa are in the north half of the draw.
South. Of course. Yes, because Villa played Barrow, didn't they?
Yeah.
So how mental's that?
So that is a bit mad, isn't it? It does feel a bit odd.
It literally divides across Birmingham. Okay, yeah. I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, you're totally right, Jack. Jack, it was great to see Anthony Robinson get his first goal for the club just days after he got his first assist for the club. So I think we've potentially got a different side of Anthony Robinson here. We knew we probably had this side of him in the locker, goal scoring, assisting. But it's nice to see it coming to the fore now, because I think that if he adds that to his game, then he really does become a very, very dangerous left back if he wasn't already.
Yeah, there has been an awakening, if you will. he feels like he's starting to maraud. And I think this is maybe something that we've talked about, right? And the fact that we're starting to see the fullbacks hit the byline. We're starting to see the fullbacks career into the box. We're starting to see the fullbacks make real differences at the sharp end of the pitch. And it's something we didn't really see under Scott Parker, right? That's the difference here. We're suddenly, and look, there is also the element of this that you have to consider, and I'm not going to lay this all at Scott's door, as one of them is in the Championship and one of them is in the Premier League. Sure. But even in the first season under Scott in the Championship, it was hardly, you know, the fullbacks going absolutely like wandering through teams. It was Joe Bryan did that in the playoff final. And we were all a bit like, where's that come from? We're not seeing that all year. So it did feel a bit like they've been let off the leash. And in doing so, it's quite nice to allow the attacking tendencies of our fullbacks to get into the game. And I actually think it's potentially why we haven't seen someone like Steven Sessegnon, right, play in this game, because we've seen and kind of over the times he has played for Fulham, and look, I love Stevie Sessegnon. I would love him to be a success at this club, but I'm struggling to see it when Silva wants his fullbacks to go and push on and be part of that. And what we're seeing is a player who's defensively excellent and maybe is a little bit suspect going forward, you know, a kind of, I don't know, Aaron Wan-Bissaka mold, shall we say, of a fullback. And I don't know if there's space for that in a Silver system. What we're seeing from Robinson is him really, really start to push forward, to tuck in, you know, tuck wide a lot of the time and really hit that overlap. But that underlap from Cav is the first we've really seen of that. And it's something we saw Silva do quite a lot at Everton with Luca Dean there, that Luca Dean underlap, and Seamus Coleman did it a little bit as well to a lesser extent. But Luca Dean's underlap made massive strides for Silva in that Everton side. And I think we're going to see more of it because it's something that tactically he has done before. And I wasn't surprised to see Robinson popping up in the box at that point to get a shot away. And thankfully it went in.
Yeah. Peter, let's talk about the kids then that we saw out on the pitch. We mentioned Jay Stansfield, and you spoke to him at full time. We had Tyrese Francois on the side. We know about Tyrese Francois, but Pajaziti, a name new to a lot of Fulham fans. I looked down the Fulhamish WhatsApp after we sent the team, and the most common response was, so I thought I knew all the Fulham players, but Pajaziti was a new one. I'd heard of Pajaziti, but I didn't know much more about him. A tidy performance in the centre of midfield, not like huge amounts to write home about, but just some neat passing seems to fit into this side in the cup team.
Yeah, I had the same thing with my Twitter mentions as well. So who is Adrian Pajaziti? Where has he come from? Has he just popped out of nowhere? But no, he's been around for a while. He has had quite a rapid progression in the 18s and 23s. I think last year would have been his second year of the 18s, and the plan was to play him first half in the under 18s, second half of the season, 23s. Pretty much played the whole season with the 23s, was captaining them by the end. I think he's captain now. And yeah, he's exactly as you say. He's a central midfielder. He's very tidy. I think on the last under 23s game of last season against West Brom at the Cottage, I spoke to Colin Amogbihin and actually asked about Adrian because he had a very good game. And you know, he's a number. He can play as a six. He can play as an eight. He plays a 10. You can see how good he is technically. He's quite tall. He's 6 foot. I was quite surprised by his frame, but he's still a little bit light. I think he can still. I think we saw an element of that in the game. And actually, afterwards, Marco Silva said that he almost made it difficult for his midfield trio because they're all quite creative. Obviously, you had Bobby Decadova-Reed, who was far more advanced. Tyrese Francois is another tidy player, but he's not the most physical. And the same with Adrian Pajaziti. So, and I think at times we saw that in the game. You could see Birmingham, when they did break, they would break through central areas quite comfortably, whether that be going direct or playing through them a little bit. But on the ball, I think both Tyrese and Adrian Pajaziti were very, very good. And it's a good step for Pajaziti. I think he's been, sort of been fortunate in that, you know, he's not a player who's training with the first team. He's not like Jay Stansfield, who has been with the first team since the summer. But he was sort of called into it. I mean, we can see that they are quite light in central midfield at the moment. Anguissa wasn't involved last night. Seri was on the bench. Reed's still not back. Kearney's still out. So in a way, it sort of opened for him. And Silva said that he'd impressed when the first team had played the 23s. And that's how he got the opportunity. And I think he took it. You know, he's put himself into the frame now. And it was a big night for him. And you know, he played full 90. And that's all you sort of really want from a youngster. And it's so encouraging for the academy as always. I mean, that age group in particular, Adrian Pajaziti, Jay Stansfield, Fabio Carvalho, similar age. Harvey Elliott would have been the same age as well. I mean, that's one hell of a cohort they've got coming through. Mickey Bierra, who went to Arsenal, another one in that age group. I mean, it's pretty one hell of a generation that have come through. And and then of course we mentioned about Jay. I did speak to Jay afterwards. He's a really down to earth guy. You could see how much that moment meant to him. He said his family were in the stands. They were able to come down. They'd come up from Devon, of course. Jay signed from Exeter in 2019. And you know, for him, you know, in the last couple of years, it's not been straightforward in that, you know, he made his debut under Scott Parker, scoring tons of goals for the under 18s after joining from Exeter. And it was at that point that you thought, okay, maybe he can kick on again, but was never quite able to do that. You know, the pandemic was one thing. We've talked about before on this pod about how that sort of separated them out, the 23s and the academy and the 18s, and how that makes things a little bit more difficult. But also he had a serious ankle injury, so that wiped off 4 months. And I think it was only midway through last season that Jay Stansfield was starting to get back into that rhythm of how he was playing before that. And he had the opportunity to train with the first team in the summer, has impressed in preseason games. Obviously, it's been light in attack because there's only Alexander Mitrovic, who's sort of a recognised centre forward. And that's given Jay Stansfield an opportunity. And you know, Silva said afterwards that, you know, he plays these players because he thinks they're ready. It's not because they're in the academy. It's not because they're just there. It's because he thinks they're, you know, they're able to play in the first team. And it's been so refreshing to see how so many young players in the team, and because we all know how good Fulham's academy is, and actually being able to see it, see these guys coming through, see that they're able to fit in well and play in a team that's winning, which is also important. I mean, it's much harder if we take the Premier League season, because you're not going to get those opportunities and the environment is very different. But right now, in a season like this, it's a great opportunity. And for Pagesiti and Stansfield coming in, it was a really nice moment for them, and they both did well.
Well, it is, you say, like, we all know how good Fulham's academy is, and of course we do, but like, I think because we've so infrequently had the chance to see players, and last season Fulham had the lowest amount, I think, of academy minutes in the whole of the Premier League. It was so dispiriting last year, and that was why the Fabio Carvalho moment towards the end of the season, where he scored against Southampton and played well in those games, was so refreshing, because it was like, oh yes, okay, there is some kind of path, even if a narrow path, between the academy and the first team. But I guess that's the benefit that the Championship gives you. If you want to read Peter's article, which is all about Stansfield and Pagesiti, it's on The Athletic right now, and the code is the same from the beginning of the link if you want to sign up to The Athletic. Jack, your thoughts on the youth team burning through? We've known about Jay Stansfield for a number of years. We got him from Exeter. Everyone was very excited then. It does feel finally like the realization of the talent that we've always known he had.
Yeah, I think it's important not to massively rush things, right? And Drew wrote an article on Fulhamish yesterday about, he's like, let's just get really excited and make sure that Stansfield's on the bench and getting minutes. And I was like, whoa, let's just cool that off a minute. I remember everyone being incredibly excited about Stevie Humphreys, right? And well, that didn't go quite to plan, did it? And then I think you can think about this and look at it in different ways. And look, that's no skin off of what Jay Stansfield has done, especially this week, because the goal was absolutely exceptional. I thought he was really good. You know, again, we couldn't watch it if you weren't there, but there's, if you do want to go back and have a little bit more of a look, there's extended highlights on the Birmingham YouTube rather than the Fulham one. There's about 10 minute highlights there, so you can watch the game in a little bit more depth and kind of understand it. And I think that's where I saw Pagesiti shine a little bit more. You know, that coolness, that calmness in possession, the ability to just recycle and get things done on a kind of comfortable basis. And it's mad that Tyrese Francois is the senior partner in that midfield duo, right? But that's where Fulham have got to. And no, I think it's important that we measure this. I think it's crucial that these players do get minutes, and that's why it's exceptionally important that we get through things like the first round of this cup competition, because it opens up the door for minutes and opportunities and genuinely, you know, like, competitive games for players who are on the cusp of breaking through from the under 23 squads and beyond. And look, it's not just this lot. Obviously, Sylvester Jasper's gone out on loan as well. Kieran Bowie, someone we haven't spoken about, but he's, you know, someone that they think has a really bright future at the club as well. And I think that there's a real pipeline open there if Fulham can keep it going. Like, now, it's difficult, because if you come up to the Premier League next year, who's the player that gets the opportunity? I don't know. I don't know if you have that same ability to just chuck someone in at the deep end if Fulham win the league and go up, and which is something we're all hoping for. And so there is this element that this year you want to see more of those players get those opportunities. Hopefully the next rounding in the cup is something that we can look at our Leeds game and say, right, can you step up and do it against, I'd imagine, what will be, you know, the reserve side of a Premier League team rather than the reserve side of a Championship team. And that's another question mark and another step up that you can look at. And from there, I think it's just a question of, you know, trusting these players if the opportunities arise. Like, look, Pagesiti, for example, is going to do well to get past John Mikel Seri. He's going to do well to get past Josh Onnema in the form that he's on. He's going to do well to get past Harrison Reed when he's back to fitness. But that's not saying that that's impossible. And we've seen from the explosion of Fabio Carvalho that when players do get an opportunity and they seize it, they will be given those opportunities again. And so I'm hopeful that the same thing will happen here this year.
I mean, Jack, you probably raise a good point there that maybe the Leeds draw is good for Fulham's development point of view. I'm just sick of the cup draws. Sick of them.
Yeah, I mean, look, what were you looking for? AFC Wimbledon, maybe, you know, a trip to Plough Lane might have been fun.
That would have been lovely. But Wigan,
like,
away.
That's what, one of 32. Like, the chances are relatively small, mate. Like,
there was loads of good draws in the last round. Could have got Forest Green away.
I mean, you say that, but I mean, if we'd got Forest Green away, it would have been even more difficult to get to than Birmingham away. You wouldn't have been there.
Anyway. Still would have been fun.
Like it's as simple as that. Like I think the best you can look for at this point is like a local derby away, or just like a lower league team at home. They're the two things you want really at that point, right? Just that's what I'm asked for.
Just to follow up on Jack's point about the development side, I think one of the things that obviously with Fulham being relegated, the academy are a little disappointed about is that they're not in the EFL Trophy this year, which they absolutely loved and thought was a fantastic vehicle for the young players to play against senior pros. You know, last year they had three games. There were difficult encounters. It's a completely different environment to what 23's football is like. And it's those opportunities that they've sort of lost a little bit. So a cup run is, you know, all the more important when that second avenue is shut off for this season. And you know, there are loads of pros and cons to the EFL Trophy, particularly if you're a lower league club and you don't really want to be playing academy sides. But from the academy perspective, it is quite valued. And one of the other things, actually, while we're on that topic, is I'm just thinking of Adrian Pajaziti here. With the pandemic and everything that's been going on, and we've talked about playing at LSE and that pitch, there was a general unhappiness at the pitch last year because in the summer it was too hard, in the winter it was too wet, and it was not very conducive to playing decent football, particularly the football that we're sort of used to. And you take someone like Fabio Carvalho and you take Adrian Pajaziti, very technical players, Tyrese Francois, and it was much harder to play in that sort of way. It was a bit more of an attritional style that Fulham adopted. They still did okay, but never quite, not able to play in the way they'd want to. And I think at the tail end of last year when they played one or two games at the Cottage, you could just see the difference, and these players had just come alive. And now that you know that's sort of been taken away, they're now playing back in Motspur Park. That makes quite a big difference as well. So, I mean, in terms of presenting themselves these opportunities, it's much easier to do that and to showcase what they can do. And as we saw on Tuesday night, you know, they're very, 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 very capable at a senior level, technically.
I mean, maybe it's taught them how to, you know, play at a wet Tuesday night in Cheltenham. That would have been another good draw for the third round, Jack. Trying to look through here. I mean, I get your point that like, if I couldn't make it to Birmingham, then could have I made it to Oldham? But still, you know.
I'm just saying.
I wanted to make like a scale of like fun cup draws with like maybe like call it like the Kettering spectrum or something like that, with Kettering at like ultimate number 10, like 10 out of 10 away day that you can get in the cup. I'd say Leeds at home is probably like maybe 4 out of 10. Like it's not too bad because at least like it's a Premier League team at home. Would you agree with that, Jack, on the Kettering spectrum?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Like it's a, you know, aside we aren't going to play in the league this year. So there's that element of it. You know, it's not going to Birmingham twice in 2 weeks. So that's a start. It gets us to.
Oh yeah, we've got to go again, haven't we?
Oh yeah, we've got to go again. Don't worry.
In about
10 days. Yeah. I'm all right with Leeds at home. I think it'd be interesting. I think it's a good test for the lads to play. For this side, and I hope Silva will do the same thing. I hope he will rotate. I hope he will give opportunities to the young guns who haven't been given an opportunity in the league. And if he does, then it's a good test against a Bielsa side who will undoubtedly play in that way, no matter what side comes out for Leeds. But we'll see how it goes. I'm okay with it, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, well, that's going to be played on the 21st of September at 7:45, that game against Leeds. That's in between the Reading home game and the Bristol away game. I imagine he probably will go for a second string side, Jack. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't rotate heavily. But one game I know he won't rotate heavily for is Stoke City, and we're going to be talking about that next. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And Peter Rutzler.
Hello, hello.
Jack's trying to like trip me up in the interlude there, saying, "Well, I think he will rotate heavily from the cup game for Stoke."
Well, he made 10 changes midweek, so I'd assume he's going to make. I assume he's going to make 10 changes again, mate. If I'm honest,
you've been very tricky. You've been very tricky today. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Very, very tricky. Let's come on to Stoke on Saturday then at the Cottage. Both teams vying probably to go top of the league. I guess West Brom might have something to say about that, but certainly to be in a very, very good position 5 games into the season going into the international break. Jack, this is going to be for Fulham's first real big test. I'd argue that Middlesbrough was a bit of a test, but you know, Stoke looked really, really good this season. Very strong defensively. You know, struggled to score goals last year, looked to have kind of fixed that a little bit this year. And if you saw the goal that Stoke scored on Saturday, I believe it was against Forest, then this is not the Stoke of old. This is not the Stoke that you know under Tony Pulis. This is a swashbuckling Stoke.
Yeah, they're quite fun to watch, which is pretty weird to be saying about a Stoke City.
I can't quite get my head around that.
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre, but yeah, I'm sure that they're having a good time. I'm sure our friends at the Wizards of Drivel are having a great time watching them. But yeah, look, they are a very good side, and this midfield three in particular of Joe Allen, Sam Klukas, and Mario Vrančić is a very, very good side, a very, very good trio. They are you know, very, very talented. There's a lot of footballing ability in there. Vrančić in particular did really, really well when he was at Norwich that first season in the Championship, and obviously moved away and has gone to Stoke. And I think this is it, right? This is a side who were finding their feet under a new manager last season. And Michael O'Neill is a very, very good coach. And I've said it before, he's someone who's taken, you know, of Northern Ireland and has taken Northern Ireland further, perhaps, than maybe that squad would suggest they could go in a tournament, in qualification, in all of it. You know, he seems to have raised the bar in terms of what it is for the Northern Irish football team. And then you take that and you look at what he's done with Stoke, and suddenly this is a side playing in a 3-5-2 who, as you say, not only were playing really, really nice football last week and plays, but can also mix it up, right? Who have the ability to go long to a Stephen Fletcher if they need to, who have the ability to run in behind Josh Tiemann on the right hand, the left hand side is a very, very good player, and he will look to get in behind. He's the person who scored that goal last week. But not only is it that, he's someone who will look to get off that shoulder if he needs to. He's playing as a wing back at the moment, which is quite interesting. And just seeing those kind of attacking tendencies unleashed a little bit more. I think it's a really good sense. And this Stoke side are I think, going to be the real deal. I'm not 100% sure they've got quite enough depth to go and push it to be a top two side this year. But I'd be very surprised if they're not in the playoffs.
Michael O'Neill's done a very good job there. I was just looking at some of his comments recently about the job he sort of inherited and why it's sort of taken so long for them to probably do as well as most sort of predict at the start of every season, because obviously they, you know, they're still that former Premier League team. And he talked about how it was difficult to bring through youngsters there when you have those disillusioned pros in the dressing room, those senior elements who don't really want to be there. The team aren't playing particularly well, and it's harder to bring everyone together. But Jack touched on it there. You've got Josh Tiemann, Ben Wilmot's come in. There's Harry Suter as well at the back. And then you've got that complemented by a really experienced core, you know, Sam Klukas, Joe Allen, Mario Vrančić. That's a really experienced trio in the middle, and Stephen Fletcher up top. I think they brought in Sam Surridge as well.
Yeah, Sam Surridge has done really well. He's a really good player. I really like him.
I really like him as well. I'm surprised Bournemouth let him go, but I guess they need to raise funds. He's a poacher, classic poacher, and he just needs a run of games. He's not really had that. I think he had it at Swansea for a little bit where he was coming off the bench, and suddenly he was in the first team, and then he got recalled because Bournemouth had an injury crisis. So they've got a nicely balanced squad now. There's a good amount of talent. I do agree with Jack about depth, but you look at the results they've had already. I think winning at Swansea was impressive. They've got an experienced coach at the helm, and you'd expect them to be up there. I think they were one that we picked out at the start of the season as well. And it's just having that nice balance of youth and senior pros that want to be there. And when you start as well as you do, then that's important. And I guess from just looking at them, but thinking about Fulham as well, having that positive start has been so, so important. And this is the proper litmus test now, isn't it? We've had there's been some tricky games, but this is the first real test, I think, for where Fulham are at. Coming into it with the form that Fulham are on, haven't lost under Marco Silva, including in pre-season, so it doesn't really get much better than that. But you only have to look at Sheffield United and the hard start that Slavica Kanovic has had, and how quickly you can get caught in that sort of Championship vortex that just sucks you in and keeps you there, which probably Stoke were involved in and only now starting to come out of again. So it can take hold very quickly. So maintaining that positive atmosphere is really important, and it'll be interesting to see how the two sides match up, and hopefully it'll be a really, really good encounter and a real test for this nascent silver ball.
Yeah. Championship vortex, I like.
I think that's really nice.
It really explains how this division can work. And you are seeing Sheffield United at the moment, who actually aren't playing like that badly.
I maybe disagree with that.
I don't think they are playing that badly. I think it's been tight games. I don't think it's gone for them. I think they've missed big chances and I think they've lost games narrowly.
Yeah,
I think
fine margins losing 4-0 to West Brom, to be fair. Fine margins.
I mean, it was just long throws, though, wasn't it? It was embarrassing.
Yeah, long literally. Throws FC. Long throws FC are about. But look, we've got to deal with the fact that long throws FC are about. Like, to be perfectly honest with you, you read things like the numbers game, right? And people are like, why doesn't everyone do long throws? And they make a point. Like, long throws work. Full stop. Long throws work. They're not that pretty, but they always work because like they just have a much higher percentage of making something happen than normal things. Like, it's just the numbers of the game. No, I don't like watching them, sure. And I'm happy to call West Brom long throws FC. But the reason they banged 4 in against Sheffield United is because long throws work.
Peter, I wanted to come on to some of the injuries. Marco Silva did talk about it a bit after the Birmingham game. Imagine we'll find out a bit more in the press conference. But we saw Ream go off with an injured back. We saw Tete go off after, a hamstring injury.
Muscular injury, wasn't exactly clear.
And then Fabio Carvalho also went off towards the end of the Hull game. I mean, it seems mad to think that Fabio Carvalho is suddenly a big loss when he's only played 4 games and he's so new to the side, but he is. Have we got any hunches that we might see one of them back? Like Marco Silva kept his cards quite close to his chest on this one.
Yeah, he did. He did afterwards and after the game on Saturday against Hull and then again after Birmingham on Tuesday night. I think Tim Ream obviously is his back, Fabio Carvalho with his ankle, and then Kenny Tete was muscular. And I don't know which one, but obviously had that calf issue that kept him out for quite a while last season. So hopefully it's not a reoccurrence of that. I think reading between the lines of what Silva's saying, I think, you know, I know he said they're all three are a doubt. I feel like Kenny Tete's is more serious. And then Tim Ream and Fabio Carvalho will see. I think Carvalho seemed like a knock. Ream, I'm not sure. I don't know to what extent, and maybe it will keep him out this weekend. Silva says they're all a doubt, so we'll just have to see. And I think the right back is interesting now. Dennis Odoi did very well on Tuesday night. He can do a job at this level. There's no doubt about that. Cyrus Christie's with the 23s, or had been with the 23s last week. I don't think he's going to stay this window. I imagine if he can go, then he'll go. And then there's Stephen Sessegnon, who, as Jack mentioned, you know, we're still not, haven't seen at all, and at least publicly, under Silva, and I think he's had a few interruptions. So I think there was a COVID issue. I think he's had a couple of slight knocks. So I don't know if there's a decision on Stephen Sessegnon yet. Last year he was unfortunate, got injured. He's not really had many breaks really. So it'd be interesting to see if he does get that opportunity or at least come back into the picture. Now, of course, against Hull, Bobby Decker Dover Reed came on and played at right back, which he's very good at, and we all know about his versatility, but he did do wonder if that's a little bit of a waste again of his talents. And I did ask Silver about Decker Dover Reed, and he's a big fan of him. I think he mentioned that they had a little chat about what his best position is, and of course Decker Dover Reed wants to play more offensive positions. We saw that against Birmingham. But he does have that versatility. So, and particularly with the way Silva's teams attack, as Jack was outlining earlier about the fullbacks bombing on and how that's got the best out of Robinson, maybe that will give an opportunity for Bobby on that side, and that will come into the consideration. Really, I mean, I wouldn't say that's the worst thing in the world, because you know Silva's had a really good reputation of improving fullbacks, and with the early signs for Robinson, as we were talking about earlier in the pod, are really, really good. I mean, we all know that his end product was the issue probably last year. I think there were loads of times he got into good areas. As much as it was that, there was also the fact that Fulham couldn't finish anything. So actually getting the end product and that, sorting that out. And I mean, he was so good against Hull, wasn't he? And the way he forced them to make a tactical change. I mean, that's the biggest compliment you can give a player, really. So that bodes really well. And yeah, and maybe we'll see Bobby on the right. But
get Marlon Fossey in IMO.
Yeah, he's been around the first team, so he's been there. So I don't think he's at that point yet, but he's been around.
I just don't massively feel comfortable with Bobby at right back. I don't know. I guess I'm worried about the defensive side. Like, I realised that Bobby's a talented player. He could do a job. He did a job against Hull. And look, they had like Keane Lewis-Potter on the left-hand side, probably one of Hull's most dangerous players. And he kept him pretty quiet. Although by the time that Bobby was really having to do much work, we were 2-0 up. And it's, you know, a bit easier to defend when you are 2-0 up. I would just be a bit nervous to see Bobby going up against Stoke at right back on Saturday.
Yeah, right back is different to right wing back. And obviously under Scott Parker, we saw him as a wing back as opposed to being as a right back in a four, which is a far more defensive responsibility. So, no, I do agree. But you know, there are options there if Tete's injury is serious.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a massive blow, Jack, to lose Tete. Look, yeah, fortunately, Fulham have depth, Fulham have options. And Ream is not quite as serious a problem because we have such depth at centre-back. But... I'm happy if it is Dennis Odoi at right back, but yeah, Tete's a massive loss. Like no one's can replace his quality.
Maybe he can do the back thing if he comes on. That'd be good. I'd enjoy that.
It's been a long time.
Since we saw Dennis do the back thing, and that was at right back. He hasn't played at right back all that much since he did the back thing. So maybe he could return to doing that. But yeah, no, it's obviously it's a big loss if we lose Tete. He's a cut above. I think this division. I mean, look, him having a little muscular issue at the end of the transfer window isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world, as far as I'm concerned, because it means he ain't going to go bomb around doing any medicals, any other clubs, frankly. So yeah, I mean, look, I would rather he was fit. Yeah, please don't take that the wrong way. But if it's going to be, you know, if it's we've got depth there. Alfie Mawson, I think, has been really good since he's come in. He's been impressive. It'd be great to see him actually get a run of games. I mean, I literally call me Doubting Thomas, but until Alfie Mawson plays 10 games in a row, I refuse to believe that he will be able to play 10 games in a row. But, you know, I'd love to see it. Things I would genuinely love to see.
I think we all wish him really well. It's just been such a shame that his time at Fulham has been so blighted by injuries.
I think it's one of those things now that we look at it and yes, you're right. There's more depth at centre back than there is at right back, whether it's Bobby in a right back or, you know, you assume that I think it will be Odoi that gets the nod. I'd be surprised if he goes for Bobby Reid from right back from the start. And especially if Carvalho's out, I think he's probably going to need Bobby Reid playing 10 because he's the only player in the squad who I think has the innate ability to do exactly what Carvalho does, or not exactly, but to get close to Mitrovic and play off him and be able to pick up those spaces, pick up those second balls around Alexander Mitrovic. I don't think we have a natural player who does that in the way that Carvalho does, apart from Bobby Reid. So I would be surprised if Carvalho is out, if Bobby Reid isn't playing 10.
Is Wilson a potential option at 10? I realise he's not the same player as Carvalho, but he's certainly... is very good in that position. And well, Peter said that Bournemouth, you know, would like to see Wilson. And of course he is back after suspension.
Yeah.
Well, I think you can play him there. I would probably stretch to putting him wide. I think he's better cutting off the wing on his left foot. I think he's better, you know, tucking inside. I like him off that right-hand side because it gives him the freedom to do what he does best. I think he's a wee bit wasted in the middle because one, you get marked a little bit more closely, and two, you kind of have less space to angle your runs, which is what Wilson is good at, and then unleashing. So I would suggest that yes, he can play in the 10 in a pinch, but I would prefer to see him off the right.
That's interesting. Peter, your thoughts on Wilson returning? Almost certainly he'll be back in the starting lineup after his suspension.
Yeah, good timing as well, obviously with Carvalho picking up a knock. So I do agree with Jack. I think Bobby Dekker Dovery could really thrive in the role that Silva wants. I think when he was at Bristol City, he played off for Mara Jeju, and that's when he had his highest goal scoring season, I think, unless I've got
he
that
was
right.
He was brilliant that season, scoring against Fulham, I remember. Yeah.
So it was a similar sort of position in a sense, and that's what Silva wants from his number 10s. He wants them to score goals, probably more so than just creating opportunities. And if you want a player, can do that, be Dekker Dovery. But then again, you've got Wilson, who's got goals in abundance. But I do like him coming inside, giving defenders something to think about. The only question you would then think is who's giving the width on the right. I mean, Dennis Odoi is a very sort of right back, but then it's about what can come in the final third as well. But there is other options in going forward. You know, Niskan Skabana started the season really well. Even Cavalera's done okay. Anthony Knockhart's still involved. So who knows? I mean, there could be flexibility to mix things up.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, look, we'll see what happens on Saturday. Certainly a big game. Let's get into some questions after the break. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast with Sammy, Jack and Peter. Let's do a quick transfer update. It feels weird, Peter, that the window is closing in 5 days and the links for Fulham are threadbare at best. It's almost like the business is done. Muniz was completed last Friday. We haven't discussed him massively. We might get into him a little bit more detail next week. Saw he was flying over from Spain to England yesterday. A Phil Jones rumour seems to be the limit of it coming in.
Yeah, I can't see that happening. But, you know, famous last words, I guess. But
weirder things have happened at Fulham.
Yeah, it would require some departures. So I guess what I would say about it being quiet is that it kind of points to there not being that many expected departures. Now, I don't want to say that because things change on deadline day, as we all know very well. But I'm thinking specifically of Jean-Michel Seri and Frank Anguissa, who we've talked about at length. We know that they both would go. I think that's obvious if a better suitor came in. But at the moment, that hasn't materialized. So I imagine if that changed and suddenly it became very, very likely, you'll see something develop to fill the gap, because we've seen how light Fulham are in midfield, particularly at the moment with injuries. As much as the youngsters have done well, I think Silva will probably want to add some seniority in there. But then the rest of the squad looks pretty solid, I guess. I mean, we've talked about it before, but I don't see there being a desperate need. I mean, right back is a question mark, but I mean, there is options there. There's depth there and there's an opportunity there for someone to step up. So I wouldn't call it pressing. I don't know. I mean, Silva at the beginning of the month was very much saying, I expect the squad to look very different. It doesn't look very different at the moment with 5 days to go. So I would probably say that's a good thing considering who's still on the books. Whether there's a need to move people is a different question. I guess that's less pressing if Fulham look a dead set to go up. But yeah, I mean, at the moment, I guess that is revealing in itself. There's nothing particularly urgent. I think Maxim Martian's been linked to Strasbourg recently, mm-hmm. in France. They've talked about him being quite close to going there.
Yeah, he hasn't been involved. Close, yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't been involved at all. So that wouldn't surprise me at all. I mentioned Cyrus Christie earlier. And then aside from that, you've got a good base there with some good young players behind it. So we'll see. I mean, things change quickly, and that's kind of how I kind of see it as linked, almost like a domino effect. So we'll see.
What does transfer deadline day look for you like, Peter? Will you be doing a live blog or anything like that on The Athletic?
I don't have to do. We have our tracker which we update, and then there's also like I think we do. I don't know if we'll still do it. We do like a pod update if something's happening. I've always seemed to have had busy deadline days. I had Josh King at Man United when I was at Bournemouth. And then Fulham is just every time. It's busy. I mean, it's never not, is it? Last summer, both of the two deadlines were frantic, to put it mildly. Lots of messaging, lots of calls, and trying to find out what's actually going on. And then yeah. So maybe it'll be quieter this time, but I'm not.
Don't count your chickens.
That's what I was thinking of chickens, but I didn't know how to say it. But yeah, I'm not counting them.
Okay. Well, you never know. TK might just wake up feeling dangerous on Tuesday morning and make your day a misery there, Peter. Let's come on to a couple of questions that have trickled through. First one is from our new Fulhamish Discord channel, which we've started for people that back us on Ko-fi. So thank you to all the people that have joined that this week. And also thank you to people that back us on Ko-fi. Ryle says, I love this team and think Silva has done an amazing job, but isn't the quick start covering over the fact we haven't solved the problem of our long-term planning around player business? Are we any closer to stopping the yo-yoing? I must admit, Jack, I've had similar thoughts. Like, I'm really enjoying what we're seeing, but I'm also thinking, does what we're doing really stop the gap next season, or is it just here we go again, let's say that things go well this year?
Okay, so on this, here's my thoughts, in that You look at the players that did well last season: Kenny Tete, Tosin Adebayo, Anthony Robinson to an extent. And you look at the rest of the squad around them. Harrison Reed did well last year. He's still here. John Mikel Seri seems to be reborn. Now, look, I'm not going to judge Seri on four games because he had a great start to a season once before and it didn't pan out quite as planned. But he's someone who you think has the capability and ability to go on and play probably at the top level. You look at Fabio Carvalho, who looks like he's someone destined for the very top. Harry Wilson's come in. He's someone who's played at Premier League level before on the right-hand side. And Alexander Mitrovic is Alexander Mitrovic. On top of that, we've brought in Rodrigo Muniz, who's an unknown quantity in some ways, but appears to be someone who was on the radar of a lot of clubs and who there was genuine interest in from across Europe. So that's a pretty decent kind of platform. Now, obviously, that in itself is not going to be the answer to all these problems. But what it does is gives you a spine stronger than what went up last time in order to build around. And I do think there's a level of this that we learned from our mistakes in some ways. We didn't learn from our mistakes in others. What we did was we basically still failed to have, we still basically turned over the whole squad, didn't we, last year? It ended up being a new squad, right? There was, what, three players who played in the championship final, who featured regularly for last year's side. Now, if you look at what we're doing this time, you think maybe what you want is six or seven to start if you go up and to start in the Premier League. Now, I think Fulham are edging closer to that. That's what I would suggest. And whether that is by hook or by crook, and whether that is by keeping hold of players and making sure that they give it another role in the championship. And we spoke about, you know, just then, the fact that Silva thought the squad might look different. At the moment, it doesn't. And if you think about things like that, then it probably helps Fulham in terms of where you build from the next time out. So if I think there is a level here that when you're looking at this Fulham squad and looking what it's capable of, I think it's a much better squad than what Scott Parker started the campaign with 2 years ago. And in that regard, we are moving in an upwards direction as far as I'm concerned.
Peter, your thoughts?
I agree with Jack. The main thing to take from the current team is that base is still there. That young base of players that we were very excited to bring in. They're still here. So Tosin Adebayo, Anthony Robinson, Kenny Tete, Harrison Reed fits into that, I think. It's been complimented. You know, the one criticism last year was having some support for Alexander Mitrovic. Rodrigo Muniz has come in. Harry Wilson looks like a very, very good signing. Is a kind of player that can grow with the team. And I think that's the criticism in a way, is that you have a team that can grow with each other so that you don't disrupt it with wholesale changes. Now, last season felt different to the Premier League season of 2018-19 in that it was far more cohesive. And, you know, we've talked about it endlessly, but probably should have stayed up. And then you got a different base again, and then you can set your platform. And I guess one of the questions about the yo-yo issue is, I guess, do you want to then... It's difficult because of the squad. The squad's so strong that it doesn't make any sense to try and almost reset in the championship, particularly at the moment, when the target is to stay in the Premier League. And if you can get to the Premier League and then hook up, get your hand on it and stay in it and build from there, then you've got a different picture, I guess. But if you want to build longer term, you need to be thinking longer term in terms of your recruitment. And it seems that they're doing that, particularly the last two seasons. That's how I see it anyway. So, and complement that with the young academy players, the ones that they can keep if they can, and then that's a pretty good basis. You know, it is really difficult to get into the Premier League, and I think it's much harder if you're not in that parachute payment club, which Fulham seem to be in, along with Norwich and Watford.
Parachute Payments FC.
Yeah. That's the bridge, isn't it, between the two divisions. And the downside is you get caught in this yo-yo cycle. The upside is that you can actually get back, and there's always that opportunity to stabilize. Haven't done that yet. Need to get that right. But it seems like there are some good signs that Fulham will be able to do that this time around. And being less disruptive with the squad, I think, is key. You know, you want to keep everything pretty stable. You want people to know each other. You want people to know the identity of the team.
And if you're able to do that, then great. There's always an inevitability about who goes and who comes in when you get to the top flight, because you have to add, because the quality gap is huge. So if you want to break out of Parachute Payment Club FC. But it's a challenging one, because if you look at, I mean, we talked about Stoke. If you fall out of it, it can be very difficult to recycle, to move those players who are on good wages and good contracts. And so the only real way to combat it is to think longer term and to recruit in that way. And I would say, in my opinion, that Fulham have definitely done that in the last two seasons.
Yeah, I think quickly my point is that it's interesting to see some of this perceived criticism of Norwich this year, that they haven't spent enough, which is a ludicrous thing to say when they've spent 60 million. Certain radio stations have said that this week. And I would love it next season that Fulham go up and actually we're not having to buy 11 players in a completely new side. I would love it if we go into a season where we're like, okay, we obviously need new players. We're in the Premier League, but let's spend 40 to 50 million on three players that can really make a difference and completely add to this side. And I think actually, if we were to go up, we have the infrastructure there with Marco Silva and the spine of this team that probably we'd be able to do that. And whilst it would still be difficult, it would still be a season of, you know, ups, downs, turmoil.
Yeah, it's never going to be easy. You can't, you know, it's never going to be like, oh, right, Fulham have gone up and they're going to wander through the division. Like,
yeah, this isn't
a side built like Wolves were, and it's not a side with Marcelo Bielsa at the helm, right? It's always going to be tricky. But I think Fulham are getting better at understanding what needs to be in place for Fulham to survive.
Yeah, 100%. So that's my 2 pence worth, plus a full summer. I mean, it's going to be a weird summer because then there's the World Cup in the winter, but it's still going to be like not 4 weeks trying to go into the Premier League. We've seen what a full summer has been able to do this year, and it was a Euros year. So that is, I think, what could make the difference for Fulham this year. Anyway, we've not really got through many of the questions, but it was a great question, Ryle. So thank you very much for that one. And it's time to end the podcast. Jack Collins, I think we know what the podcast name is, but let's do the formalities. What are we going for?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to be Streamless But Seamless, isn't it? Absolutely phenomenal. Well done, Cam. Very, very good.
It's a podcast, so you couldn't see what I was doing, Cam, but I was giving you a silent round of applause just there. So congratulations on a great pod name. We will be back Sunday, Monday. It's bank holidays weekend, isn't it? But we'll be back anyway this weekend, reflecting on the Stoke game going into the international break. And then Jack is going to be hosting Thursday Club, looking back at transfer deadline day and potentially a bit of profile on our new signing, Rodrigo Muniz. I think Jack is tapping up his Brazilian contacts for that one. So yeah, have a listen to that next week, and have a listen to us on Sunday. And last thing to do is just say bye to my guest, Jack Collins, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sammy, as always.
And Peter Rutzer, thank you.
Always a pleasure, Sammy. Thank you.
Have a lovely weekend. Hopefully Fulham can get 3 points. Come on, you Whites.
You Whites.